All right, let me turn your attention to our screen, and I adjusted it so maybe things will look bigger, better. Organic evolution has never been observed, and of course could not be observed, but we're looking at fully developed organs. This is sort of a continuation of last week's, where we were talking about such things as the eye that is immensely complex. And we mentioned a bunch of other eyes that, are immensely complex. And there is no way to gradually get there. It has to, all the parts have to be working before the eye works. And it's all kinds of disparate, different parts. So we're going over this again. In this, there's more to say. All species appear fully developed, not partly developed. They show design. This is the thing. If evolution were true, as I've mentioned before, we wouldn't see a lion and a tiger and a bear. Oh my. We would see a four-legged thing that was more or less like a tiger or something, but we wouldn't know a tiger because we didn't have tigers. What makes these things lock into a species? If it should just be malleable, just changing, just growing. Why is man like this? Why are we maybe more ape-like or less ape-like or whatever, wherever they say we come from? We don't see any of that. They have no in between species. I can't point to any of them. So what happens is that this shows design, that they were made, designed to be a tiger, designed to be Calvin rather than Hobbes, you see. And all of this, it shows design. Let me introduce William Paley. He wrote Natural Theology. And this is in 1802. The work contains many powerful arguments for a creator, but it is a classic in scientific literature. Some might feel that because it was written in 1802, it's out of date, but this is not so. Here's my emphasis. You see that? Boom. Fred Hoyle and N. Chandra Wickramasinghe. I suppose. Evolution from Space, a Theory of Cosmic Creationism. It sounds like B-movie, doesn't it? Creation from Space. Evolution from Space, a Theory of Cosmic Creationism. They say this, the speculations of the origin of species, that's Darwin's book, turned out to be wrong, as we have seen in this chapter. It is ironic, in other words, it doesn't seem like that would be the case, that the scientific facts throw Darwin out. The scientific facts throw out Darwin's scientific theory. But leave William Paley, a figure of fun to the scientific world for more than a century, still in the tournament. It leaves William Paley still in the tournament with a chance of being the ultimate winner. The facts of science side more with William Paley, Natural Theology, than with Darwin's Origin of Species. So look around, be a science viewer, and notice that there are no examples of half-developed feathers. Here are creatures that it's almost feathers, but just not quite developed. Or eyes, or skin, or tubes. What tubes? Well, arteries, veins, intestines, or any of the vital organs, dozens in humans alone. There's no being, almost human, that had almost intestines. Just doesn't happen. Tubes that are not 100% complete are a liability, you see. So are partially developed organs and some body parts. So suppose in this mass of odd evolution and accidental changes that the ape turned into able to walk upright, but his stomach and intestines weren't complete. Well, he died, so take him out of the gene pool, see? Kick him out of the pool. This can't help the work of evolution. It has to be complete. Asa Gray, a famous Harvard botany professor who was to become a leading theistic evolutionist, couldn't let go of the evolution. But he said the only way for it to work is if God did it. Wrote to Darwin expressing doubt that natural processes could explain the formation of complex organs, such as the eye. We'll use the eye as the main example. Darwin expressed a similar concern in his return letter of February 1860. In the book Life and Letters of Charles Darwin, Volume 2, he says, "The eye to this day gives me a cold shudder, but when I think of the fine known gradations," Darwin believed possible, these things are possible, if millions and millions of years of evolution are available, "my reason tells me I ought to conquer the cold shudder." He says, I see that there's a way around it, see? And yet Darwin admitted potential error. Listen to this, and let's take him at his word. "If it could be demonstrated that any complex organ existed which could not possibly have been formed by numerous successive slight modifications, my theory would absolutely break down." Well, here's still the eye with no possibility of it gradually forming. So let's junk the old theory. Virginia Morell, "Placentas May Nourish Complexity Studies," Science Magazine. "It is one of the oldest riddles in evolutionary biology. How does natural selection gradually create an eye, or any complex organ for that matter?" She says, "The puzzle troubled Charles Darwin, who, nevertheless, gamely nailed together a ladder of how it might have happened. From photoreceptor," this is where you have a patch on the skin, whatever skin the animal has, that reacts to light, photolight, and it's a receptor. So photoreceptor cells to highly reformed orbits, the hole in which that, by drawing examples from living organisms such as mollusks and arthropods. But holes in this progression have persistently bothered evolutionary biologists and left openings that creationists have been only too happy to exploit. And we are happy about that. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. Okay. The thing is, this is one of those things where it's an obvious gapping hole in the theory of evolution. You can just say, "I think it happened," but that's faith and not science. David Resnick, an evolutionary biologist at the University of California, wrote to Virginia Morell. He said, "Darwin had to use organisms from different classes because there isn't a living group of related organisms that all have the steps for making an eye." So even the photoreceptor and so on, you know, it didn't happen in one organism, in one species. So he had to just find out that here and there they had these things. And if you imagine that that's all one creature, you can almost imagine that it would work. So Morell, Virginia, rebutted the reasoning. Resnick admits that, Resnick himself then came up with an idea. Different species of guppy-like fish. I'm not that big on fish. I don't know if guppies sound like little tiny fish, but anyway, guppy-like fish, some of which have no placenta, which was her study there, you remember, and others that have tissues that might become placentas. So he found it within the guppies. There seems to be a step here that they have something that's not a placenta, but it's in the area and looks like maybe a half step toward placenta. She rebutted this reasoning. She said, Resnick admits that the guppy-like fish's placenta might not be as sophisticated as the mammalian placenta. In other words, it's not a placenta. What he said was absolutely true. It's just tissue that might become one. But what does that prove? See, it doesn't prove anything. Not scientifically. Let me give you a long quote. Gertrude Himmelfarb, that's a good German word. Himmel is heaven and Farb is color. Heaven color, that's a good name. Wrote Darwin and the Darwinian Revolution. So she wrote this. The eye, as one of the most complex organs, has been the symbol and archetype of his, Darwin's, dilemma. Since the eye is obviously of no use at all except in its final, complete form, how could natural selection have functioned in those initial stages of its evolution when the variations had no possible survival value? It didn't make them, survival of the fittest, didn't make them fitter. It just was a thing stuck evidently on the head, see? Didn't see, couldn't hear with it, you know, couldn't feel with it. It was just on its way to being an eye. So what good was it, and why did it stay? Why wouldn't that be rejected with the next evolution step? No single variation, indeed no single part, being of any use without every other, and natural selection presuming no knowledge of the ultimate end. Natural selection says, well, it's not any good now, but I'm hoping it's going to be an eye. Well, natural selection doesn't know that. It doesn't understand that there's light rays going around that ought to be received. See? There's no foreknowledge with natural selection. This is an important concept. No knowledge of the ultimate end or purpose of the organ, the criterion of utility, the usefulness, or survival would seem to be irrelevant. That it would finally help doesn't matter. Natural selection wouldn't know that. There are other equally provoking examples of organs and processes which seem to defy natural selection. Biochemistry provides the case of chemical synthesis built up in several stages, of which the intermediate substance formed at any one stage is of no value at all. The halfway mark wouldn't help. And only the end product, the final, elaborate, and delicate machinery, is useful. And not only useful, but vital to life. She finally ends by saying, how can selection, knowing nothing of the end or final purpose of this process, how can it function when the only test for natural selection is precisely that end or final purpose? If you had the eye pop into existence with the next generation, then natural selection said, now I've come to something here. This works, see. But if you've got a retina that doesn't have an eyeball, you know, none of this works. For example, if a leg of a reptile were to evolve into a wing of a bird, this is, now they're saying the dinosaurs came from the birds. So now it's the other way around. It would become a bad leg long before it became a good wing. So how did that help the lizard? Well, it's bad now, but I'm going to fly later. No, he didn't know that. Stephen J. Gould, my closing comment. The return of hopeful monsters. I wish there was a monster like this. Of what possible use are the imperfect, incipient stages of useful structures? What good is half a jaw or half a wing? So, complex, fully developed complex organs. We know those, but they had to come by design, because natural selection wouldn't have known it would have been a help until the millions of years had passed and it finally divided. To understand the problem is to recognize that evolution is built on hopeful monsters, on giant guesses, on we've worked it out this far and we've worked it out this far, but right in the middle, some magic happened, and then this became that. And that's the scientific story of evolution. All right.